Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains Media, broadcasting on 96.9. My name's Martine and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help, and then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who's an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage with any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
So, what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you're an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. And if you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it's an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who've joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains Media, broadcasting on 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share their experience with alcoholism. So, let's meet our guest. I wonder if you could introduce yourself and let us know, start with your age and how long you've been sober for.
Hi, my name is Jemima. I'm an alcoholic. I am 33 years old. I got sober at 29. I'm 3 years and 3 months sober.
Excellent. And what are you doing? What do you do work-wise?
So I've actually gone back to school. Mm-hmm. I'm studying. I'm not working at the moment. Before that, I was a photographer. I also worked in film and television. Before that, I had a bunch of different jobs, usually either creative or service-based.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Are you any family? Are you married? Do you have children?
So I've been married once. Mm-hmm. I am in the process of getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. I don't have any children. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. And can we start with what your childhood was like, what it was like growing up?
Yeah, sure. So I come from quite a young family. So my mum and dad had me when they were, my mum was 22, my dad was 19, and you know, obviously being very young, It was kind of, I think maybe a different environment from what a lot of people experience with their parents growing up. Because they met so young, it was quite an unstable environment, mm-hmm. to say the least. There was a lot of arguing, and they ended up breaking up when I was about five. So they stayed together for about 2 years in total. And, you know, before that, we went traveling around the world, and, you know, we lived in London for a little while. I have some memories of that. But yeah, I remember clearly from a very young age being a bit scared of my mum.
Right.
She was quite fiery and, you know, she could lose it at the drop of a hat, whereas my dad was the opposite. He was very, like, he'd shut down very quickly, very disconnected, and I think I learned to do what he did, just kind of disconnect from a very young age. Yeah.
Was alcoholism a part of your family history as well?
Well, I look back now as an adult and I can say yes.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that until very recently. So if I jump forward, I can say that grandmother on my father's side, she was an alcoholic. I believe she's passed away. Mm-hmm. I believe that she was actually in and out of AA in Christchurch. And so her son, my dad, is also a heavy drinker. Whether or not he's an alcoholic, I don't know. Mm. But my parents did drink a lot because they were young.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have said that it was an obvious issue. I can just look back now and say yes.
Yeah, sure. What about your first drink when you first started drinking? How old were you and what were the sort of circumstances around your early drinking?
So my very, very first drink, I remember it being, I think, Christmas Day, and I was with my dad's extended family, and I was given a shandy for lunch, yeah. And I was about 11. And I remember having a couple of sips, and within 5 minutes, I felt this weird rush in my neck, mm-hmm. and I just kind of noticed very quickly that I was able to be really confident, and
right.
I started to become, like, quite arrogant, and I was just, you know, the one drink was enough to get me going. I didn't really have my first drunk until about a year later. I was at another family gathering and me and my cousins nicked a couple of beers and I think I had about two or three and that was enough to get me going. And I just remember feeling completely like, wow, this is the thing that I want to do forever. Like I can do what I want. I can be confident. I can dance. I can be stupid and not worry about what other people think. And that was the first time I'd ever really let loose.
Yeah. So how did your drinking progress?
Well, since I'd kind of decided, well, this is a feeling I really love, any time I could get my hands on alcohol, I would. So from 12 onwards, if we were at, we have a shared family batch, we would be there. My great-grandmother stored wine there. I would steal a bottle of wine and drink it over the course of a weekend. And that was the starting point. And then high school was every weekend, and then it was during the week. And I basically just wanted to chase that first initial feeling that I got from the moment that I did. And because of that, everything else fell to the wayside. I just, like, nothing else was as important as going out and just getting as drunk as possible. Getting to blackout meant that I had a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just progressed quite quickly if I think about it now.
Did you get yourself into trouble?
Oh, yeah. I ended up in hospital. I got my stomach pumped. I first drink driving charge, I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah. And I, you know, I never had these like real conscious negative or nefarious intentions, but I just thought about what I wanted to do and I just disregarded everything else. And the consequences were just a result of me doing what I wanted all the time, and what I wanted to do all the time was drink.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh God, I can so relate to that.
Yeah.
I really, really can. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you think, this is a problem for me, this is not going well, I've got to do something about this? Did you hit a rock bottom?
I think I knew early on much. I think I knew early on that it was a problem. I would say from when I got my first drink driving charge, perhaps before that. You know, things start out with, oh, you get drunk and you have a little argument with a friend maybe when you're 14, and that seems like a big deal. And then those big deals just get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And I was quite self-aware in the sense that, I mean, I carried a lot of anxiety with me, one of the reasons why I drank, so I was always hypercritical of things. So I knew it was a problem.
Yeah.
But I didn't have another option. I didn't have something else that could fill that space. I didn't have anything that I felt was more important. So it just didn't matter. That was the path that I wanted to go down, and I just didn't see any other option.
Yeah. So when did it stop? When did you decide you'd had enough?
Well, I first walked into AA about 6 years ago.
Had something specific happened?
What had happened? I think, so I got to a point where the external circumstances, they weren't terrible. I got into a lot of obvious trouble when I was younger. Drink driving, getting put in jail cells, things like that, getting injured. I just started to contain my drinking to either someone else's house or my house that I knew I wasn't going to leave.
Yeah.
And so I started to do that. I didn't go out to drink because it was too expensive and I wanted to get as much alcohol as possible. So why would I waste my money at a bar? That was not really how I drank. It was drinking at someone's house with as much alcohol as possible.
Yeah.
And it just got to a point where I'd done the same thing so many times, I didn't feel good in myself anymore.
Yeah.
It was like I felt void. Like the thing that I did to make me feel better was just kind of neutralized. Like it did nothing for me anymore.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was probably less than neutralized. It was, you know, making me sick. I was hungover. I couldn't participate in my life outside of that without it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really have hobbies. The only friends that I had were people that did the same things as me. And I just started to feel emotionally sort of bankrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, even though I heard everything I needed to in my first meeting, it wasn't enough for me and I had to go out and keep doing it, you know.
So what ultimately got you into recovery then?
Well, I think it was a mixture of what I just said as in, you know, feeling completely like just kind of like a shell. Like I didn't know, I didn't have a purpose. I didn't know what my life had become. And I just thought, I imagined my life so much better. I imagined feeling fulfilled. And like, for some reason, me plus drinking doesn't equal the life that I thought that I wanted. Yeah. Because there's actually a lot of like active work that it takes to live a good life.
Yeah.
And I just thought that I could kind of scoot by and just get what I wanted, doing whatever I wanted. And that hadn't happened. And but because I'd had this message in my head from AA, when I went back out, I went out and I drank and I still continued to do that. But I had this feeling in me like, you know better. Like I made a connection that first meeting I went to.
Yeah.
And I heard everything I needed to hear to identify. But I wasn't fully able to say, I want to give it up. I want to give everything up. Because I also didn't realize that being sober didn't just mean putting down alcohol, which was obviously a problem, but it meant you can't take anything.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how my life is. I can't take anything because I overdo it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your first meeting of this recovery, what was it like?
It was a relief. You know, I did feel nervous because I kind of had this, you know, mindset of I'm going to be judged when I walk back in the room, and I was really worried about that. I was worried that people would think, oh, she's back, which actually no one's thinking about me as much as I am, for one. And actually my sponsor said to me, welcome home, like, welcome home. I'm glad you're back. And that was really it. I realized like for somebody to come into the rooms and sit down at all, everyone else in the room appreciates it. And it takes bravery and no one's sitting there judging you. And if they are, they're not going to tell you that.
It does take bravery. It absolutely takes bravery.
Yeah.
So what's different this time? So you mentioned you've got yourself a sponsor. What do you do to keep sober? And what happens if something happens that makes you feel a bit wobbly? What do you do?
Well, this time round, I basically admitted that I didn't have the answers. And the first time round, I think I kind of still thought, you know, I can do this on my own. And I was really on the outskirts as well, like socially.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to mingle with people. That made me feel really uncomfortable. I feel still to this day quite socially awkward. But I think a big difference for me was connecting with people and actually building these lifelong lasting connections. Because when you're connected to other people, it's so much harder to leave, for one.
Mm.
And that was a starting point for me. Another thing was that when I was about 6 months into this recovery, I wasn't feeling good. And I'd actually, about 6 months into the recovery, I'd gotten to a point where I just didn't feel good and I hadn't felt good for a while. And my friend said, well, have you been getting on your knees and praying? And I said, well, not really, no. And she's like, well, you need to. And she just kind of told me how it was. And I started to do that. And I'd been so resistant to that. But in actual fact, it made a huge difference to me. And if I try and articulate and go into that too much, then I start bringing my analytical brain into it and it's too hard to describe. But that was another turning point for me. So I guess in a bullet-pointed way, the things that have kept me in recovery this time round have been connection to others, actually praying and being open to the concept of a higher power, obviously staying in contact with a sponsor because I can't make good decisions on my own.
Yeah.
Going to regular meetings, so, you know, at least 3 a week is my goal.
Yeah.
More is better, but, you know, that's my goal. And with service and things like that, I do what I can on any given day. I have sponsored one person. I've recently moved cities, so I'm not sponsoring them anymore. But those are things that keep me sober. And I think the biggest one is staying connected to the people in the rooms and to the higher power. It's about connection for me.
Yeah. Well, they say that that's the opposite of addiction, isn't it? It's connection. So how do you feel about yourself today and the sort of person you are and the contribution that you can make to things like your friends and your family and things like that, as opposed to when you were drinking?
I think the biggest difference now is that I can just be present with people and I can actually listen and not just be waiting for my turn to jump in to talk or to talk about myself. And an example would be my first time round in AA. I remember I had contact with my little brother and would talk on the phone every night. And then when I picked up again, I remember going to one of these phone calls, drinking, and just thinking, like, I don't want to be having this conversation. I just want to be going and doing my own thing. Complete disconnection.
Yeah.
No want to be there for somebody else. Just want to go and do whatever I want to do. And from sort of the moment that I got sober, I realized and I kind of was able to get back to that. I actually want to sit with someone. I actually want to talk to them on the phone. I want to be around people. I think that's the main thing, is that having an interest in something outside of myself.
Yeah.
And having the ability to follow through with things, to be relied upon, to be able to actually say no to things when I need to. That's been a really hard thing for me all my life, is that I want everyone to like me.
Yeah.
And so saying no to things within reason, you know, things like that. And
I think you make a really good point. Learning to say no, if you're going to get resentful if you don't, it's a skill I learned. I certainly learned in AA. What are your goals for the future?
Well, it's funny because they say you'll live a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I have these moments sometimes of just waking up being like, how did I get here? And I mean, I'm an adult student now. I'm in my first year of university as an adult. And I went to university about 13 years ago and I dropped out because of drinking. I couldn't finish it. I couldn't do it. Never thought that I'd be in a position to come back. Never thought that what I'm studying was available to me. You know, you're not smart enough. There's no way you can do that. You don't know how to study. La, 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 la. So in actual fact, where I am now is already beyond where I ever thought I could be. So goals in the future for me, I guess I try to keep it simple. Stay sober, finish uni, stay connected to people. You know, like, I don't have any big goals. Like, I want to buy a house. I want to travel. But at the moment, I still feel like 3 years in recovery, you know, is still fairly early. And I've just got to keep it in the day, really.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sage advice. So AA is described as a spiritual program. What does spirituality mean to you?
Well, through doing the 12 steps, I became open-minded about spirituality again, because I sort of conflated religion and spirituality together and I didn't have a very positive relationship with the idea of religion. So I guess through doing the 12 steps, step two and step three, I became open to that. And now when I have to conceptualize my idea of what God is or what spirituality is, I do have quite a hard time. All I can say is that I do have a higher power. I do have a personal relationship with something that most people call God. I do as well. I cannot describe it. All I can say is that it's a connection with something bigger than me. Loving, it's a something loving. It connects me to everything else. And I try not to anthropomorphize it, big word.
Yeah.
Just because then I start to get a little bit of a religious flashback and feel like I'm doing something wrong and I've got this man staring down at me. And
yeah,
so I'm quite vague about what my spirituality is, but it is there, it does exist, and I wouldn't be who I am today without it.
Cool. And lastly, if anyone's sitting at home listening to this interview and they think, I don't know if I've got an alcohol problem, I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic, what's one piece of advice you'd give to them if they're listening to this interview wondering?
Well, I can take it directly from the big book and say, try and control yourself drinking. And if you can't, ask yourself why. That's probably one thing. Yeah.
Cool. Jemima, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thanks.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or you can call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear more from AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 on Plains Media and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past show on the Plains Media website at plains.org.nz, or you can download, subscribe and listen to our podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for listening. And remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. And if you want to stop, we can help. And you don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with a serenity prayer, as we do in every AA meeting.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains Media 96.9.